Beast OCR proudly presents BeastNet Podcast, sponsored in part by GH Under's Performance Based Layers and supported by the OCR community. Here we discuss all things OCR related. Welcome to BeastNet.
Hey everybody, this is Adam Bergenheyer with Beast OCR, standing in for Pretty Mike tonight on this episode of BeastNet Podcast. Today we've got a group of beasts that all went over to Iceland this past weekend to take on the Spartan Iceland Ultra World Championships. So with us on the line today, we actually have a nice cool crowd. So you have myself, Adam Bergenheyer. You've got Bo Green, David Robertson, Renee Larson, and Tessa Turnbull. So welcome, everybody. How are you doing tonight?
Awesome. Fantastic.
I'm doing great.
Now, it's been a couple days since Iceland. How's everybody feeling?
Tired.
Great.
I'm happy I made it to work. 5:30 came early.
I love it. So if one of you wants to start, I'd love to hear about your Iceland experience, what you'd want to share with people, things you're proud of, maybe something you ran into that was unexpected, anything around your gear that worked well or didn't. Who'd ever like to go first? Fire away.
Well, if nobody's going to talk, I'll talk. This is Renee, and it was not anything like I expected at all. I mean, on paper, it was completely like, oh, yeah, I should be able to do that. I've been training all year long. And then you get there, and it is a giant challenge. And it was really fun to be able to complete that. It was just amazing. It was nothing I think I could have done without a team that encouraged me on and helped me.
Mm-hmm.
But that was probably the only way I ever could have done that event. So thank you, team.
You're welcome. So I'll pick on you then for a minute, Renee.
Okay.
What specifically... So for those that don't know on the phone, or excuse me, on the podcast, it was a 24-hour format. It was as many miles as you can through as many laps as you can in 24 hours. So, Renee, what surprised you most? Was it the time? Was it the elevation? The repetitive movements of multi-laps? What was it that got you?
It was that how slick it was. I mean, how icy it was. 6.8 hours at 6.8 miles isn't all that hard. And I do those hikes quite often. And I've done multiple rounds of other events before. I did the Warrior Dash and went around three times and went around another one three times. And I did another event where I went around a bunch of times. But it's in Iceland, and that elevation, and how far up you had to come down, and then coming down really, really steep hills, coming downhill. It's just 6.8 hours of miles when you're doing that. Unless you experience it, I don't even know if you can describe it. It's just completely different. It took a lot of energy to do.
Absolutely. Burning a lot more calories than maybe you're used to, doing all that in that environment.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't the gear, because I had that figured out. So it wasn't really cold, and we were lucky. We never got wet. It was just, I probably would have gone on maybe a couple more long adventures, but in the end, I was able to do it. So that was great.
So what was your favorite part of the event?
Even though it was really, really hard, and I'm not very fast going uphill, I really, really enjoyed going up the ice slope and then climbing on the ropes all the way to the top. I really liked that part.
Can you describe...
And coming down was kind of fun, too.
Yeah, coming down was something else. While you're talking about that slope, you want to describe that for the folks that are listening?
Well, it was a straight uphill. I mean, I do Mount Peak out here. And we have the park called the Goat Trail, and it was like the Goat Trail for 1,000 feet up, and there was rope that you could, and it was hard until you got to the rope section, and then it was fun. Because you grabbed the ropes and you climbed up like you were Batman or Robin climbing up a building. So it was pretty fun.
That's awesome. Any surprises obstacle wise?
Yeah, I was surprised that the rope was so slick on the rope climb, and so I wasn't able to do it. And the rope climb's like my favorite thing to do, but the rope was just so slick after doing so much rope work on the hill, I just couldn't do the obstacle. I had to do the penalty every time.
Yeah. So this one saw the use of not just a burpee penalty in the standard mandatory obstacle, but a penalty loop. How did you feel about the penalty loop system?
I liked the fact it was mixed up and it wasn't all burpees. That made it more fun, something to look forward to, something different.
Absolutely. I liked that some of the penalty loops weren't just a place to run. There was a penalty barbed wire, there was penalty bucket carries, and a few others like that that, you know, weren't terribly difficult or terribly long, but enough that still throw you off a little bit, but definitely an approachable alternative.
Yeah, so it kind of mixed it up. If you had to do burpees all night long, I think you probably would have gone insane. So it was nice that there was something different to do if you did fail the obstacle, which was pretty much happening a lot at the end of the race.
Me too. So, what ended up, like, what was the defining moment when you realized that you were going to finish? That you got that. You were gonna own that ultra.
Well, once I got past that darkest hour after the second lap, and I wasn't sure I wanted to go back any else anymore. But once I got through the third lap, I knew there was no way I wasn't gonna finish the fourth lap. And I was just getting food in me and getting back out. I think it was that there was kind of a funny little circular, I'm not sure what it was, a little water tower or something, and that was kind of, that was the point that you knew when she popped up, got to there, that you knew you were gonna be done just shortly. So that was kind of the point where I was having a small little party inside when we got to that.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to share?
I can't think anything right now.
Well, feel free to chime in here as we continue.
Okay.
Thanks for sharing. I know it takes a lot to share. So we got Renee, we've got Bo and David and Tess. One of you want to share next kind of your story as far as, you know, why Iceland and what happened after there? I'll pick on Tessa.
I wanted to go back after last year for some odd reason. It's really pretty, and it's just unlike any race that I've done.
Yeah.
And my goals adjusted a little bit this year. So I, regardless, Iceland was going to somehow happen. Just somehow. And it helped a little bit at the end of the Dallas Ultra when Joe gave away the entry. And I know that pisses a lot of people off, but it was fantastic for me because I was about to buy it leaving that race.
That's awesome. So thanks, Joe. So tell us a little bit more about Iceland. Like, what was your experience? What was your highs, your lows, gear failures, things you maybe learned that were different from last year?
I was really happy with the weather. I couldn't have asked for better weather. Last year, it was insane winds with rain, and then the rain freezing, and then it getting muddy. So everything that said waterproof, it's not in Iceland. It's not waterproof. I had almost a bout of hypothermia at the end of the first lap last year, and I had to get my baby out and snuggle with James and drink coffee and soup and just try to stop shaking. It took about half an hour, and then I'll suit up and go back out there. So this year was super nice. I just had two thermal tops on, and then David and I didn't even stop. We just went for a second round. And that's kind of where my body was like, I hate you. And my hip flexor started hurting, especially with how brutal those carries were. So my body was feeling it for sure at that point. But if that wouldn't hurt, it was a pretty awesome course, I think.
Yeah.
Besides the one dreaded second sandbag carry, that was just insane.
Tell us about the carries.
Besides, like, one of the worst things they could have done.
All right, you got to tell us. What's why was it the worst carry?
The sandbags froze, even though they tried to keep them from freezing. They were hard and they were bulky. They just didn't, unless you kind of just carry it like a bucket or on your shoulder, I guess. I don't know. It just was awkward, extremely awkward because of being frozen. And it felt like it was straight up. I'm not sure what the degree was on that hill, but enough to make you second guess yourself why out there.
Well, they weren't normal. They weren't the normal sandbags. They were those Spartan pancakes. So they were really hard to move instead of being a sandbag, which if they had been the regular sandbags, you could have gotten up there a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I think they finally overfilled the second set. So the pancakes were really, really, they weren't flat at all. They were really like big pillows. So I think they were slightly overfilled.
I was thinking that too. I didn't want to be the only one.
Well, because they were bigger than the first sandbag carry.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but you were slipping and sliding the whole time.
If you went far to the right, it was a bunch of mud and water, and I was trying at all costs to stay dry. That's just when you got cold, when you got wet.
Yes.
That was my goal. Make some pretty interesting routes to avoid some water.
No kidding. I think that was the theme of the night. There was a lot of people doing that, taking a couple extra steps one way or another, anything to keep drier longer. So for you, like Tessa, as you're going through the race, especially experiencing last year, did you have any of those dark place moments where you got in your head and you wanted to quit, or was it something where you just felt like I can just keep going, or what was that like this year versus last year?
Last year, it kind of just, we walked pretty much the whole thing because it was just so nasty and slippery. This year, it was nice. I was able to run a little bit. You know, being able to run a little bit, just being warmer.
Yeah. And then the wind gust picked up throughout the night and game got a little more steady.
Oh, the dark place, sorry. Dark place. My dark place is because I'm used to willing my body to do stuff, and I've done it quite well the last 2 years, but experienced some hip flexor pain after South Carolina Ultra into the HH. Once I got to the airport the next morning trying to hit Vegas on the way home, and my hip just wasn't cooperating and I could barely even walk. So I was trying to just hopefully not have that happen at the Ultra. I really wanted to do more laps, but having to go out there for the fourth and basically have to do a fifth because of having to finish between 9 and noon, I just was kind of just unsure what to do. For me, I wanted to do more, but I didn't want to break myself.
Yeah.
So having to be responsible and not going, my mind was saying I want to do more, but my body was like, you know, take it easy. So it was, the carries were tough, and then having to go up. So thank you, everybody that helped me get through those, for sure. David. But then being able to do the rings the 3 out of the 4 times, and then get the twister 3 out of 4, it kind of perked me back up a little bit, like, okay, hey, you don't suck. You're not that bad. You can do what you can and keep going. My dark place was just my body not having my body cooperate the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
I kind of put it through a little bit this year. And actually never stopped from last year.
Or endurance trifectas will do that too.
Yes, Ellie. Iceland was the completion of 4 endurance trifectas.
That's awesome.
I added up the hours today. I haven't got to my medal post yet. From start to finish, or say, hey, the event officially starts at 5. Say, like, if you're only counting the 12 hours. And then I added up my ultra time. So it's 196 hours this year. If you're just going by start times, like the minimum, but quite a bit of hours.
Yeah, like 5 minutes. It's not too bad.
What'd you say?
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes, right? It's not too bad.
Yeah, no, not at all. But I've met so many amazing people and stuff through school. So much stuff. It's fantastic. You can go anywhere and be able to contact someone and they'll invite you into their home, and vice versa.
Yeah. What would you tell somebody considering an ultra or the next world championship ultra?
Sometimes I've actually told people, like, hey, you can go out there and you can walk, jog it. fine. Just go out there. Experience it. Maybe not necessarily Tahoe. But I kind of just, I don't want to scare him. I'm like, oh man, it's so bad. He's like, no, you can do it. So I try to like ease him onto the plane of that they can do it. Instead of just, yeah, freaking him out.
Any advice you want to leave with anybody? Or leave for anybody around, you know, running an ultra like the Spartan one in Iceland, preparing for one, gear, mental, whatever. Any advice you want to leave?
I would say definitely cardio, researching, maybe some past races in the area for gear options, talking to people on the forums, getting advice pretty much from anywhere that you can. Mm-hmm. And usually the advice out there on the Spartan forums are pretty solid. And then just maybe getting a friend or two, three, four, five, you know, we'll do it together. The moral support is crucial to possibly not finishing. So get your friends together.
Yeah. So we did a thing where we took, you know, a small team over to Iceland. How did you like that? And how did that compare against last year?
I went with the team last year.
Yeah, the Gogi team, huh?
No, actually, Ryan and I were doing the Gogi, but Jonathan and Joe and Dirk. And then there's James. So we did that as a team. So I actually left before them and then just met them there. But I ended up not finishing the Gogi. James and I didn't finish the Gogi. Ryan did. He's a rock star.
What's up, Ryan?
So then we left at like hour 16 because we had to call our own ride from the roadside. And then we just went to the venue and met him there. So I was fortunate enough to run with some people. And then all the Gogi team was together also, so that was nice. Everyone was pretty well team-oriented, as far as I know, with people that I knew in my group. But you're out there, everyone's just cheering you on and seeing how you're doing, and if you look like you're fading, there's so many people that ask you how you're doing, if you need anything. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Spartan racers are awesome.
Agreed. Anything else you want to share?
I just want to say thank you to anybody that I've encountered on the race course or just asked advice from, talked to. I mean, everyone's played a role in helping me finish my goals. Make it. So what I've got done, I'm pretty happy with what I've been able to accomplish with just some stuff, you know, a lot of stuff that you go through in your life. So I just want to say thank you to everybody that's been there.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I felt like it, you know, somebody had to say you're welcome, so yeah, I tried to help out.
I appreciate it. I knew everybody was thinking it.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. All right, Bo or David, which one of you do wants to chat it up next with us?
I'll hop in.
Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about what made you
I'm
awesome.
Bo.
Oh, and tell us why Iceland for you.
Why Iceland? I don't know. I just thought it would be something different, something to finish the year out on strong. I've done some crazy races this year, and it just looks like that was the next thing to do. I've gone a longer distance, and then that time, but never together. So why not put them together and find something that was an extreme element as well?
Mm.
So Iceland it was. And I call my friend into flying out and hanging out with me for a week.
So aside from the Iceland Ultra, what else did you do in that week in Iceland? What cool stuff's out there?
I went to a hot spring because you have to go to a hot springs. I saw, I don't know, 6 or 7 waterfalls. Went to the Black Beach, drove around. Tried to burn the clutch up in the rental car as much as I possibly could. Saw the Northern Lights one night randomly. Yeah, I mean, just trying to utilize that whole week as much as possible and just see as much. Cause, you know, there's just so much to do and see there.
Yeah. That's awesome. So tell us about leading in from that into the Ultra. What was your thoughts? How did you prepare, and how was it for you?
It was really good. The event was awesome. Going into it, preparing for it, like I just ran a lot and I lifted a lot, knowing that that hill was going to be there. I had talked to a couple people that had done it last year, and they kind of prepped me for what to expect on the ice, and that the frozen ground would be moving everywhere. Like, you know, this patch might be frozen when you come to it one lap, but then it might be frozen in a different spot at the next lap. So just kind of be prepared for falling a lot. And, you know, the wind was going to be an issue. And then if it rained, you know, watch out for that. So I just planned for gear according to that. And I think I overplanned because it's pretty warm and pretty dry the whole race. The only thing that I did do wrong was I didn't drink enough water throughout the race because it was cold and you didn't really think about drinking water. But yeah, I felt prepared for it. It felt good. Like, it was a great course, great outline.
Yeah. What was your favorite part, man? What hit you?
I don't know. The hill. Definitely was fun to go up. Not so much fun to go down, but it was fun to go up. I think even though the carries sucked, they were good. It was just in the right spot to like make you, you know, question life a little bit at that point. But you know, every time you got past that second carry, you knew that it was like smooth sailing from there on out. You had two smooth downhills, and then some nice running after that. The thing that I felt sucked the most was the Hercules. Like, the last Hercules on lap 5, I couldn't get it off the ground, and I'd never been able to not do that. But I was done.
Yeah. Well, and I felt like that Hercules was extra tough. It was, what, frozen with, like, rocks on it, and I'm pretty sure there was a kid, like, God, holding it down, too. I don't know.
I don't think it's stuck those bags, but man, they were heavy. It felt like it was a couple hundred pounds, and so I don't know if it was just from all the moisture that is collected on that sand and it was made it more frozen or what, but man, it seemed like it was just beyond heavy.
Yeah, no,
so I don't know if somebody didn't switch it over to pounds and kilograms and it was 100 kilograms in that bag.
Oh,
that
awesome.
One, that was weird because it heavy.
Yeah, that was no joke. For the folks listening, there was a lot, especially on the open wave, there was a lot of help on the Hercules for most people. And especially, what was it, the second lap or even the third lap, where it was pretty much necessary the time to
get going. It was like, this is mandatory right now. The cool thing, though, is they had rolled out the new design for the Olympus. Like, it was on a new frame, and it had that new extra pad on it, which made it, like, 1,000 times easier to do. Mm-hmm.
What do you think was different about that versus, like, the previous one? Or the previous iteration of Olympus?
Had that rubber pad on there, it allows you to get better grip with your shoes, even it coming out of the ice covered grass. Like, it didn't feel like my shoes were slick, whereas when it had the wood, you come out of the mud and, like, you couldn't even get any foot grip on there. But it felt like it was meant to be done. You know, you're on your feet, leaning back, using the handholds, like everyone's told you how to do it. But it didn't feel, and it didn't rock around like it normally does a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think them putting it on that aluminum frame with that rubber pad made a huge difference.
That rubber pad was in a few places, too. That was on the mats, I think, for the multi-rigs and the monkey bars, too. Like the little step stools.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully they roll that out to a lot of the newer obstacles in the U.S. as well, that they're more durable, better to use, better to interact with.
Yeah. So what about you? What was that dark spot for you? Did you get there? Did it mess with your head? Or was it something where you felt solid the whole time?
I think I just felt solid the whole time. Like, I just felt like I just keep grinding it out. You know, like I said, I made a couple, like, nutrition errors right off the bat coming out of first lap, and then I tried to just not make those mistakes again. And once I got past those, it was like, all right, I feel good. I feel like I can sustain this out. Coming out of lap 4, it was getting windy. I was like, oh, this kind of sucks, but it wasn't soul-crushing. It just, you know, sucked, but that was about it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I planned for it to be a whole lot worse than it was, and I had the mindset that it was going to be worse than it was. So I think that played into a factor there, because it wasn't that bad. Like, it wasn't as cold as I expected it to be. It wasn't raining like I expected it to be. So it was just like everything was a blessing at that point.
It's a great mental game, prepping yourself like that, and there's something to be said about the power of a positive mental attitude, that almost like the Batman mentality, right? You've got a plan for everything, and you go in with a great attitude and start from there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I had plan A, and all the way up to like plan F, and I brought a bag full of all this crap to make sure that would happen. And plan A worked the whole time.
Oh yeah. So what would you tell folks that are considering maybe doing something like this?
Doing an ultra or doing the world, you know, championship, do it. Like, I don't know. An ultra just like pushes you mentally a little bit farther, because it's just a longer distance. You know, like they talked about a marathon, you know, half of it's your body and the other half's mental. Like, an ultra is definitely a mental game, because you get to that first lap and you're like, all right, you know, now I got to do that all again. You know, this one was worse because everything that sucked, you didn't have to just do one more time. You had to do it at least 4 times, if not 5, 6, 7, or 8, you know, but do an ultra. They're good. They teach you some stuff about yourself that you don't know. The biggest thing is, like, your water and your nutrition. You know, if you don't have those two dialed in, like, you can be defeated before your body quits.
Agreed. What else, Bo? Is there anything
good
else
job
you want to? Yeah, good job. We, us four lappers here stand in your glory, Mr. Five. What else do you want to share? Is there anything on top of your mind? You know, things you'd do differently next time, or, you know, leaving Adam in the dirt when he's crying, or, I mean, you know.
I did not leave Adam in the dirt when he was crying.
You're right. You kicked him.
Laugh at him. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's so much to say about, like, gear and all these other things to expand upon, but no, I mean, just do it. Just go out there and do it. It's fun.
Cool. Right on. Well, I think, thanks, man. We're going to take a quick break here, guys. And when we return, we'll pick on David here for a little bit. And then we've got a couple things for the group. So we will be right back.
Grays Harbor Unders makes the performance-based layer clothing you want and need. Whether you work, hunt, hike, fish, run, or ride in the great outdoors. If you work up a sweat, Grays Harbor Unders are for you because their unique dual-layer fabric removes moisture from your body and keeps your skin dry, even when the outer layer is completely wet. It's a base layer like no other. Get you some at ghunders.com. That's ghunders.com for the best performance-based layer you'll ever wear.
Welcome back. That was a long break. Thank you for waiting. Okay. So, we've talked with Renee and Tessa and Bo, heard a little bit about their adventures in Iceland. And if he's still with us, we haven't scared him off just yet. I think Mr. David Robinson is here. David, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
My feet still don't like me, but I can't complain.
Yeah. I'm all back to normal, I think, now. My hands are forgiving me. So.
For now.
For now.
Well, tell us a little bit, like, who are you, and why Iceland?
Why Iceland? Well, my name's David, and I guess my goal for the year was to do possible, and minus South Carolina, I've done them all. So why not Iceland? You know, at this point, so got the permission slip signed from the powers that be at home to go. So had to see how that one compared to the rest of them. So it definitely wasn't the easiest, that's for sure. So there's plenty of others that people should start with before this one. But, yeah, it was a great time. I enjoyed the race and the time with the team, and it was definitely an experience that I'll always remember, for sure.
You bring up a good point in that maybe that wasn't the right one to start with. So you did, five, six ultras this year?
Yeah, that was my sixth.
So of those six Spartan Ultras, if, you know, somebody had never gone and done one before, which one would you tell them to start with?
Well, from what I hear, South Carolina is probably about the same level as Dallas. So it's probably either one of those two or even potentially Hawaii. I did Hawaii last year. So both have some flat, mostly flat terrain, but there is some climbing as far as hills go. They're kind of giving a nice test of what it's like to run a 50K, 30 miles, plus all the obstacles.
There you go. So what made, what was your strategy going into Iceland with all the other ultras in your back, under your belt? What made this one different?
Well, this time I was running with the team. Expectations were completely different than any other race, because normally I'm just there to complete two laps as fast as I humanly possibly can, so I'm not out there all day. But this one was a 24-hour race, so mainly just to stick with the team as much as we could. And it's kind of hard when there's a good number of us, especially one of us that was running an elite that's not on the phone, but lost one right from the beginning. So it was difficult to stay together, but just to keep moving as much as possible, really. Going in there, I expected it to be a lot colder than it was, so definitely to keep moving to stay warm was definitely on my mind.
So it was the, go ahead.
I was saying, just as far as like prepping for this race, it wasn't anything different than normal as far as like lifting and running and trying not to drum up old injuries and stuff, which didn't actually work out all that well. But it went in with some nagging injuries, but just try to put those in the back of my head and moving.
Yeah, we had a few bumps and bruises, for sure. throughout the night. How do you deal with that when, because you know that's real, and that's a very real thing that a lot of us deal with, is, you know, the little bumps and bruises start to be, you know, get a little bit bigger, or maybe something that used to bug us starts bugging us more. How do you deal with that when you've got such a big race ahead of you?
Well, it's when you have a very full schedule all year long, as far as races go. I know Tessa and Bo probably know for sure, as well as they do races back-to-back, like Hurricanes and Ultras, which is completely insane. But your body just breaks down, and so this one's late in the season. And so every bump and bruise is there waiting for you to run again. So it's just... at this point, it's just mind over matter. Just gotta push through it all and finish out as strong as we can.
That's a good call out. So the Iceland Ultra for you, my friend. What was it like? What was amazing? What maybe kicked your butt unexpectedly? What would you like to share?
For punishment, so I love after all the icy sliding downhill, just the gauntlet of obstacles that are all right in a row. And I like to run and like to climb insanely steep hills like that, but it gets boring after a while, so just having all those different obstacles just puts you right to the test all at once is always a great challenge. But the lap system is definitely something that's completely different than any other ultra. Since you're doing every obstacle, every lap, I feel it in my hands the most. It's just these certain obstacles that I have to take, there, I have to take my gloves off for, and it just beats you up. You know, all the grip strength just kind of gets zapped after four laps. So Twister gave me a bad time at the very last lap, but everything else seemed to fall into place.
So. Especially if you you have to take your gloves off, right? And like for some of us, just we can't do certain obstacles with gloves on. And like you said, and I'm sure that metal was, I know it was cold, and know that I bet after time and time again, it got you faster or more. Is that right?
Yeah. Twister and monkey bars are the ones I couldn't do with gloves on. Just everything else everything else I left my gloves on for. I normally don't have to wear gloves, or I have mittens that I can pull my hands out pretty quick. So, this definitely the cold played a factor into it. You put your bare hands on metal. So.
Oh, absolutely. So, what was your I mean, your dark spot, was it maybe some of the old injuries kind of popping up at you? Was it, you know, sometimes when you're running with the team, you know, you go a little bit slower at times? Was it, you know, Adam crying in the dirt? Or I mean, what was it for you?
I never saw yeah, just from years of sports and stuff, I mean, I already have a bad knee, so I mean, that's always on the edge of the dark place, as we call it. But yeah, that could, you can kind of put some of the nagging stuff behind. It's not like it's like a disability or a disabling kind of injury. So it's more just a reminder of how to place my feet when it's slippery. I saw more positives out of that race than like darkness-wise. I mean, every carry is a challenge, but especially when you're tired, and especially yeah. since being frozen. I enjoy the punishment, so it's always fun.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes when I'm in the middle of it, I'm thinking, "What the hell am I doing?" But I mean. In the end, you know, we're like, where do we sign up for the next one? So.
Yeah. We got to wait one more year.
Yeah. At least a couple months.
True. So if they, if Spartan took the Ultra World Championship back to Iceland, then would you go?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there will be, the weather will always play a factor. I mean, the course is probably, usually they don't change the course all too much, the where it's drastically going to get any harder or easier. But the weather will always play a factor at that location. So, you know, I'm not hoping for a torrential downpour hypothermia state like Tessa had to go through this last year, but we could go back and have it all like it was this year and all of us healthy, and I'd like to see us knock out either the 50 miles or, you know, 40 at the minimum. So
I like that.
That would be awesome.
Start training now. You'll be recruited in 2 months.
I started my food plan today.
Your what?
Oh, David and I were talking food on the course and diet and training for this year, so I started my tracking my food today. Thank you, David.
Of course. Anything I can do to help you guys.
That's awesome. So, David, what would you tell somebody that's thinking about signing up for the Iceland Ultra World Championships?
Thinking about signing up? I definitely need to make sure it's not their first ultra, or maybe even their first race. I've shared a lot with people kind of just online as far as like when they're like, when should I sign up for my first ultra, or should I sign up? And it's me personally, I always ask them what their beast time, like their best, like how fast they can run a beast. If it's around 5 hours, then I say you got more than enough to go for an ultra. Because 5 hours out on a course, that's a long time. And then you go and your second lap's going to be longer than that. So and you got time cutoffs usually that you have to worry about. And so it's a different animal, and you just got to make sure you prepare for it. And I don't want to scare anybody from I don't want everybody to complete it, too. I don't, you know, I'm not one to try a lot of stuff that I don't think I'm prepared for, so I will make sure I train as hard as I can and go into something knowing that I'm gonna finish or just crush it either way, because I'm not gonna quit. So that's the way it goes.
I'm
still competitive after all these years.
So it should be. Dig it. Anything else you want to share about Iceland and ultras and running or anything else?
Definitely Iceland is, I love the world championship races. Tahoe and I swim in particular, just because it brings many different people from all over the world all together. It's awesome to see everybody. It's awesome to hear all the different languages, and it's just, and everybody just there for a common cause and getting along, and it's an awesome experience. So for that, I would say everybody should go to both of those events. As far as ultras, starting out, you know, I'll probably do a different one, whether it's in the United States or another country. But if you want a real challenge, in the United States, do Killington. But that's a whole different podcast. Kettle has his own opinions on that one. So, but yeah, so go to Iceland, enjoy the experience. Once in a lifetime.
Or once a year. Yeah. So, guys, so thanks, David. So we all crossed the finish line at the same time. You know, maybe David in his competitive nature, you know, took one step first so he could cross ahead of us. I don't know. I wasn't watching. But how was that experience for you guys? What did it mean to you to cross the line together? And anybody's game here.
I think that's what we were there for, is to start as a team and finish as a team. So regardless of what happened in between, with us, you know, running in pairs or whatever, it was the goal to finish together. So I'm glad that happened.
I'm happy it worked out that we were all able to cross the finish line together.
Yeah. Anybody else want to share anything on that team aspect there? Okay, so I do have one more question here. It's super serious, guys. Super serious. So, you know, this is for each of you. Feel free to tackle it however, you know, whatever your way is. But what was the funniest thing that happened while you were in Iceland? The funniest thing that happened to you while you were in Iceland.
Oh. Well, I have stories about other people, but
I think the continuous, like, someone was always asleep. At least I was taking the photos, so no one got any of me passing out at, like, the athletes' meeting.
Renee, why are you laughing? So, guys, here, do you mind if I share this, Renee? I think the world needs to know.
managed to take a little micro nap in the middle of the when the para athletes were doing their bit. It was probably a minute and a half, and very embarrassing.
Oh.
So I guess love for everybody around me.
So, para athletes came up on the stage during the pre-briefing. They're giving this amazing speech, and they're the only ones that got a standing ovation the entire pre-race briefing. And one of them is talking about how, you know, he overcame PTSD, he overcame, you know, his brother's suicide, and you know, really dark and heavy stuff, and it going on to this amazing story. And in the middle of this, we hear this loud snore. And we look over, and Renee had just woken herself back up. It was amazing.
It was a micro nap. Because I remember hearing all of that.
To her credit, I had fallen asleep too. And she happened to wake me up the first morning.
That's what happens when you're up for 24 hours straight before you even do a 24 hour race.
Wow, that's awesome. So, Casey McAllister, if you're listening, I'm sorry. We do like you. what else? Any other fun moments that anybody wants to say, fun or funny-wise, or what have you?
Adam, falling asleep after when we were trying to get our medals. He's just, like, completely sprawled out on the ground, and my coach comes by and says, "Who's that?" I said,
"Hey, it's Adam." Oh. That was pretty funny. Yes. In line to get our medals, I went to sleep. It was great. All right, guys. Well,
I really like.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I really like how happy we generally were to be there. Be with each other and be racing in Iceland.
Yeah, I realized I haven't been alone in like 4 days, and I actually sort of felt lonely today at work because I was alone in my office for part of the day.
Aww.
That was weird.
We miss you too. We've spent some time together here today, guys. I really appreciate you all sharing. Any closing thoughts from anybody around Iceland and ultras and overcoming? Any other stories you want to share? It's all yours.
Mine's not like a big story, but I didn't get to say my favorite part. My favorite part was when she got up the nasty hill and walked across the top of the ridge, my favorite part was running down the snow. I just pretended it was sand. So, like, when it was kind of like that dirtyish color, I was like, "Oh, it's just sand." So it was fun to just actually run down it. That was my favorite part. Go to Iceland.
Run down sand. Or the Bud Olympics, you know, that's, I think we started calling that at some point during the night, or at least some of us. The Bud Olympics was, at that point on the mountain, it was almost, you just had to go straight run down the hill or fall down the hill, or you slide on your butt and just go sledding. And with those shell rain pants, you got some speed.
No one wanted to follow me to the west. And David were like, "Follow us." And you, well, David did. No one else was there. We're like, "Oh, it was really fun."
I remember that. That was fun.
I was like, "Fine. Whatever."
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time tonight. Really, really appreciate it. You guys are all amazing. Thank you for going to Iceland, for toughing out an awesome race, for being there for each other, for crossing the finish line together, and for sharing your stories. You guys are all incredible people and fantastic ultra athletes. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Adam. What was your favorite part?
Crap. I wasn't ready.
Couldn't help it.
My favorite part was, oh gosh. I think my favorite part would have to be somewhere between, you know, in that last like quarter mile lap, the sheer like sailor cuss words coming out of my mouth that like I was surprised I knew some of them. That was exciting, discovering that part. But you know, we committed to finishing together, and I think my favorite part was I wasn't going to be able to do the monkey bars at the last one. I was just roasted. I had nothing left, and I did the little penalty loop. And when I came around the penalty loop, I saw all of you right there, and you're all just hanging out, waiting, ready to go. And to me, that was really cool because here we were, you know, we promised each other we were going to do that at the beginning of that lap, and we did it. And that just really felt special. Plus, you know, swearing a lot at the end, that was pretty cool too. All right, guys, thank you so much for the time. Get out of here. Go have a good night. Have a great week. And we'll be dropping this podcast pretty soon.
All right. Thank you for the great interview.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to the BeastNet podcast, brought to you by Beast OCR. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear. You can find us on Facebook or at beastocr.com.